Well, there's really a moment of reflection more than anything else. We've lost so many people to the global AIDS pandemic, more than 37 million lives lost over the last 40 years. So first and foremost, well, there's a time to remember all the people that we've lost, all of our loved ones. But it's also a moment for us to reflect on where we're going in the response to the epidemic. There's such an incredible mobilisation of effort at a community level, among scientists, among clinicians, among governments, that really is, you know, this is when we take stock and look forward and say, right, you know, where are we going from here and how can we bring this epidemic to an end?
Let's talk numbers and data. How are we as a country doing when it comes to HIV in Australia?
Well, Australia actually has a really good story to tell about HIV. We really jumped on board, jumped on the epidemic very, very early in the 80s. And so we put in place the kinds of policies, the kind of programs that really helped us to contain and keep to low numbers HIV in Australia. Things like the needle and syringe program, they weren't easy choices for governments to make, but they were the right choices. And so we saw this very pragmatic response by Australian governments at the federal level and the state and territory level, saying, you know, how are we going to grapple with this epidemic? What's going to be needed? Education for groups at risk and making sure that HIV testing was widely available. And so Australia put those things in place, and what it's meant is that we've actually had been able to keep our numbers in check and actually keep reducing those numbers over time. So last year, for instance, in 2021, we had the smallest ever number of people diagnosed with HIV. That's 552 people, and that's about a half of those diagnosed 5 years previously. And so we're seeing this really nice reduction in HIV diagnoses over time, but we've still got a way to go.
That's fantastic news. How much of that do you feel is has been affected by COVID and lockdowns and things like that?
It's certainly a factor. And at this stage where, you know, we're sort of emerging from COVID, but in that 2021 data, last year's data, you know, obviously there were still lockdowns in different parts of Australia. So is there something sort of hidden in the data? Are we worried that there might be an increase? There's certainly concern about that. But the overall trend of decline is absolutely real. And COVID definitely has impacted on, you know, whether or not we could go to a clinic for a HIV test or, you know, so there are lots of ways in which that might have affected us and that we'll sort of see in this year's data and next year's data. But I'm not terribly concerned that we're going to see too great a rise. The overall trend is downwards.
Fantastic. That's great news. Now, Australia has a commitment to end HIV transmission by 2025. Are we still on track to achieve this?
2025 is getting very close.
It is.
It's really getting close now. But actually, you know, we can do this. It's part of what's so exciting about working in the HIV response today, whether you're a GP or a community worker or a researcher, you know, that Australia, for all of the concerns we have about Medicare and about access to a GP, we're actually better place than anywhere else in the world to really drive ourselves towards an end to the HIV transmission in this country. And, you know, what an exciting thing that would be for us to be able to say that we can do it and we've achieved this in Australia, and to actually have that as a model for other countries to look towards and to be inspired by in bringing this epidemic, you know, to its close. Yeah. So 2025, it's really short time frame now, but we do believe that we can get that number of diagnoses, 552, we can really drive that further down over the coming few years.
The world was inspired to work together during the COVID pandemic to work on the vaccine. The scientific community was astounding when it came to working together. Has that drive continued into or had any impact on the fight against HIV?
Well, I think it's, wow, what is possible when there's a sort of a global commitment, when countries are working together is quite astonishing. And I think we saw in science in particular that when the world faces unprecedented challenges, it can really step up our scientists and medical and clinical leaders. They can really step forward and achieve some incredible things. And we saw that in COVID. It means that when we're talking about something like HIV, we know that that science is what's going to get us to an end to HIV transmission. I think one of the really big differences between COVID and HIV was, we got very quickly to this point where a vaccine was on the radar, where we were all sort of able to step forward and to get those first doses. Whereas, we're 40 years into the HIV epidemic now, and today we do have all of the tools we need, whether it's condoms or whether it's pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is a prevention pill people take if they're at risk, or we have effective HIV treatment. But it took us a long time to get there, and so we've really required a lot on people not assuming there's some sort of magic solution that they could sort of, but really making choices in their lives about how they're going to keep themselves safe and how they're going to keep their partners and loved ones safe over a very long period of time.
World AIDS Day is about bringing awareness to HIV and AIDS. So let's take a step back. What is the most common way HIV is transmitted?
So in Australia, it's predominantly through sexual transmission. And that's actually quite different to many other parts of the world. But in Australia, we had a very, very early implementation of a needle and syringe program, which meant that people who were using drugs, people who were injecting drugs, had access to sterile injecting equipment. And that policy wasn't popular at the time. It was very controversial to, this idea that we'd provide sterile injecting equipment to people who inject drugs. But actually, very pragmatic population here in Australia, and I think people really recognised that that it was important to ensure that people were able to protect themselves from acquiring HIV. And what that's meant is that we have now in Australia very few people acquiring HIV from rejecting drug use. It's almost all through sexual transmission. Another part of the success story, if you like, is that the gay community, gay and bisexual men, were hardest hit very early on in the epidemic. And for a long time, there was a fear that that HIV would spread to other populations, that we'd have a generalised epidemic with everyone being sort of equally at risk of sexual transmission. And that hasn't happened. We've been able to, through the efforts of gay and bisexual men and their community organisations, we've been able to really contain the epidemic in Australia. And today it's mainly gay and bisexual men that carry the burden of the epidemic. But it's not only. There is certainly an appreciable number, about 25% of HIV cases each year are among heterosexual people in Australia.
You mentioned PrEP before. What is it? How does it work? And how has it helped with ending HIV transmission?
Well, PrEP is an incredibly effective prevention pill. It's really like a vaccine that we might have for the flu or for COVID. It keeps us from acquiring HIV, but rather than it being an injection, it's taken as a daily pill or a pill when needed by people who are at particular risk of HIV. And so for those who in Australia, mainly gay and bisexual men, who are at high risk of HIV or concerned about needing to stay safe, and they can talk to their doctor and be prescribed this pill that they then get from their community pharmacist, and they take that once a day. And what's really interesting about this is just how effective it is. So a person who's taking PrEP is very, very assured that they won't acquire HIV if they're taking that pill correctly. And that's game-changing. If you think about, you know, for people who have been worried about, have had experienced anxiety about potentially acquiring HIV for, you know, for potentially for decades, to be able to take a pill and to know that that you're protected from HIV, that's a huge, huge step forward and something that gives people a lot of comfort. They can take that pill and no longer have to worry in the way that they have previously about being at risk.
It is definitely a game changer. Now, you mentioned having to go to doctors. There's a lot of stigma still around HIV, not just from community, but from some in the medical community as well. I had the unfortunate experience of a doctor who was very judgmental when I went in for a test, which is why when the news reported of HIV self-testing kits becoming available, I thought, brilliant idea. Are they publicly available? And if so, where do people find them?
They are. So today, if a person's concerned about HIV, wants to test, and either, you know, it's not convenient to go to a doctor, or they want the privacy of being able to, you know, to buy a test and to do that at home, then pharmacies do sell HIV self-tests. They're not in every pharmacy, but popping in, seeing your local pharmacist, or searching online for a pharmacist that sells the registered HIV self-test, which is the Atomo HIV self-test. That's the company that has the registered product in Australia. It's a safe, easy, convenient test that people can use at home, much like a COVID test, and they can test themselves and they'll get either a negative result or they'll get a reactive result, meaning that they need to actually go forward for a blood test just to check because the test hasn't been able to confirm that the person doesn't have HIV.
I want to stick on the topic of the stigma that surrounds HIV, which, of course, if not treated, leads to AIDS. This stigma sort of started back when the HIV and AIDS epidemic started back in the 80s, especially around the advertising campaign of the Grim Reaper commercial. The idea of that was to raise public awareness of the dangers of AIDS, but instead it seemed to have a reverse effect and caused terrible, terrible fear towards those who contracted HIV. How has modern medicine advanced today to make HIV no longer the death sentence it once was?
Yeah, well, we're just in different worlds today. So at the time of the Grim Reaper advertising in the 80s and the early 90s, there wasn't an effective treatment for HIV. Treatment really didn't become available until about 1987, 1988, and then it wasn't very good. And so it took until 1996 for us to work out that the treatments we had were actually okay, but they needed to be used in combination. And when you took those various treatments that were available and you put them together, they became sufficiently powerful that they worked effectively. And today, a person who's acquires HIV and is in the care of their doctor, starts treatment, they will have a long life expectancy, a full life expectancy like anyone else in the community. And so today, living with HIV is really about living with a long-term chronic condition, a serious condition, but one where if you've got a good GP and you're seeing them regularly, there's no reason to expect you won't have, you know, exactly the same long, high-quality life that anyone else in the community has. And, you know, that's a really big difference. That's a long way from where we were. But you're right, that anxiety about HIV is still there. To some extent, I think it's about who acquires HIV. So, you know, there continues to be, some prejudices in the community about being gay or being a bisexual man, and that can affect the way in which we think about HIV. And we're also still pretty hung up about sex. And so because HIV is a, you know, a serious sexually transmitted infection, it kind of carries with it the same sort of, ideas that, infection with any STI can have in the community, that, someone who's acquired an STI has, might be promiscuous whereas those are very old-fashioned ideas. The reality is that as adults, being sexually active is part of being an adult, and looking after our sexual health is about having a healthy attitude to our sexual lives and to looking after ourselves and our partners. And so we need to kind of, bring HIV and other STIs into this realm of actually that's just part of being grown up and having a relationship with our doctors where we feel safe and confident to talk about these things.
Every couple of years we hear in the news that we're one step closer to finding a cure for HIV. Now, as far as I understand at the moment, once you have the infection, your body can't get rid of it. How close are we? Is there a chance of a cure, or should these sort of news reports just be taken with a grain of salt?
Always a grain of salt. I think some of the news reporting about cures and the search for a cure on HIV, they can actually be quite distressing for people who live with HIV because, of course, whether we're living with HIV or, we're friends or loved ones of people who live with HIV, we want nothing more than the day when there's going to be a cure. Mm. Even though we've got a great effective treatment, the cure is the holy grail. That's what will finally end the epidemic globally. But we're still a long way off. COVID, interestingly, has helped us a lot. And, by opening up new avenues for research into a HIV cure. But in fact, COVID research was also helped a lot by a lot of the work that's been done in HIV. So hopefully that pushes a little bit further forward. But we're still a long way away from being able to say there's an effective cure for HIV on the horizon.
The previous health minister, last year, announced a $39 million grant to provide HIV treatment for people ineligible for Medicare, and $11 million for the continued work of peak HIV organisations such as yourself. Has that support continued with the new federal government?
Yeah, in fact, those were really important announcements on World AIDS Day last year. And, of course, in May this year we had the federal election and a change of government. For AFAO, we work across the parliament. It's very important for us to make sure that we're, continuously educating and building awareness and maintaining commitment with our parliamentarians at a federal level. And so regardless of whether there's a Labor government in power or a coalition government, that we know that that there's understanding on both sides about the epidemic and about the challenges ahead and how we need to solve those. So we've done a lot of work with Labor in the lead up to the election and through the last parliamentary term and have been really delighted to see the strength of their commitment on HIV. I think, there's so many things that are on the desk of a health minister federally, so many challenges that are in front of them. But on HIV, because of how well Australia has done to date, and because we now have tools like PrEP and HIV self-tests, it means that there really is an opportunity for this minister, Mark Butler, to drive Australia to be this leader in ending HIV transmission. And he's certainly been signalled to us very strongly that's his commitment, that he understands the data and the science, and he's listening to experts, ourselves, researchers, others. He's listening to what they're saying, and he's going to step into this really exciting opportunity to end an epidemic.
Is there anything, before we wrap up, is there anything that you feel is important that people should know today on World AIDS Day about HIV and AIDS?
The most important thing is not to be frightened of HIV. We have all of the tools to prevent HIV, to test for it if someone might have been at risk, and to treat it effectively if someone has HIV. So we're in a really exciting, really new age for the management of HIV in our community. But perhaps most importantly on World AIDS Day, for us to think about the impact of the epidemic on so many people around the world and here in Australia. That impact has been felt particularly in the gay community here in Australia. And for people with HIV, there continues to be, as you've talked about, this kind of stigma that attaches itself. Many people with HIV, are considered, they're careful about who they talk to about their HIV status because of that fear that someone might not react well. And that's not an unfounded fear. We see in the most recent survey, around one in four Australians say that they would treat a person with HIV negatively if they knew that that was their HIV status. And that's still a distressingly high number of people who have no reason to fear or to be concerned about a person with HIV, but are still, prepared to behave differently, negatively, towards that person. So the message on World AIDS Day is to reach out and to be curious, to be educated, to be informed about HIV, and particularly to make sure that all people with HIV in Australia feel supported and understood by the Australian community.
Daryl O'Donnell, CEO of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations, thank you so much for your time today.
Troy, it's a pleasure. Thank you.